This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. We've all been there. We all know the feeling. And of course, there's a lot of different feelings. But the feeling that we're going to talk about today on the podcast is that feeling of cringe. And as much cringe needs to be operationally defined, or at least needs some sort of definition attached to it, so we all can communicate about it. We all know what it feels like, obviously. But let's just try to define it. It's that cross between embarrassment, shame, you want to hide. It's that moment where you didn't see it coming, but you realize that it's happened. You've put yourself square and center, right on stage. Spotlight on you. And all of a sudden, you can't sing. All of a sudden, you realize you don't have any pants on. I don't know. People have dreams like that. It's cringe. It's partly others, I'll start there, at least a thought of others. Here I am, in all of that, right in the middle of the stage, possibly the thing that I'm there to do, I can't do. At the same time, maybe I'm missing some very essentials, such as pants. But it's an embarrassment. It's shameful. I didn't see it coming. How could I have set myself up for this moment? But it's others in the sense of we're thinking, well, what are they going to think about me? What are they thinking about me? But you really can't say what they're thinking about you because you really don't know what they're thinking about you. And if it is in a performance dimension where there is therein an audience of some sorts and where isn't there, then you probably don't even know them. So how can you get really any sort of sense what other people are considering about your monumental cringe moment except to come from you? Insight section, Psychology Today, January, February 2025. The sucker punch of a cringe attack. Does your brain blindside you with embarrassing memories? The cringe attack happens when we least expect it. In the shower, folding laundry, or doing anything equally mindless. Out of the blue, the brain decides to sucker punch us with a flashbulb memory of an embarrassing moment. This is more common in people who tend to be hard on themselves and critical of their behavior in social situations. How can we deal with these moments of flushed cheek, shame, and regret? Give yourself a break. Cringe attacks usually bring us back to a memory of getting caught doing something we consider wrong, dumb, or ridiculous. But we can't go through life expecting to make zero mistakes, have no lapses in judgment, or never make a stupid decision. Give yourself some grace. We've all been there. Remember the entire memory. Cringe attacks play a short movie clip, a split second of sneezing snot on your boss, or telling a joke you didn't know was offensive until you saw the faces of those around you. Zooming out allows you to place this snapshot in the context of a whole relationship. One you've probably engaged in with respect and dignity more often than not. Talk to someone supportive. Shame tells us never to speak of these experiences. To counter this, do the opposite and share your embarrassing gaffe with someone non-judgmental. Rethink the cringe attack as an event that happens to everyone. You, me, and every person listening to this. Doing this may help connect you to a universal human experience and make you feel a little bit less awkward. Insights: the sucker punch of a cringe attack. Does your brain blindside you with embarrassing memories? By Ellen Hendrickson, who at this moment, at least for the sake of the podcast, is, for all I know, a staff writer. So, as I described what I thought the definition of a cringe attack would be, it is always within context of thinking of yourself, me, somewhat of an embarrassing situation. Obviously, my cringe is performance anxiety. Center stage, I am supposed to be doing something, I can't do it. At the same time, I'm not even sure I'm prepared to do it, missing essential elements such as my pants. But it doesn't have to be that way, but it does speak to what I was trying to speak to a few moments ago. It's not really about what other people think, although the author, Ellen, seems to suggest therein there is some answer that others might assist us. Way of going about overcoming the cringe others can assist us with in social dimension or context. Just by simply telling us, no, it's okay. You had your pants on. Don't worry. You just thought you didn't have your pants on. For a moment, you just thought what it might be like if you didn't have your pants on. No, it's okay. You sang, and all of that came out, and it was wonderful. It was marvelous. And that is reassuring. And it isn't nearly then so cringy as to think, oh, and not know, oh, they may have thought I was really stupid. The words that came out of my mouth were really dumb. How could I have embarrassed myself so badly? How could I have put myself even in that situation? Oh, I'll never get over this. What will other people think? As if they would. And do it for any extended period of time. People don't think about much of anything for an extended period of time, if only because there's something new coming along all the time. But then that gets us back to you, me, me, now you. It comes from you. It's your own self-judgment. You could argue, well, it had to come from somewhere other than me, because there was a time when I just thought I was okay. Maybe your parents. Maybe an hypercritical or overly critical boss. Maybe it was a teacher who embarrassed you in junior, we call it junior high, middle school. Maybe it's just someone who, in an aggressive sort of way, competitively, wants to trash talk to get the advantage over you, to get you into your own head. I can assure you, wouldn't come from your psychotherapist. And as much as others, in that way the article captured it, and I've again referenced it a moment ago, others can help you by telling you, no, there's no factual basis to that. Your psychotherapist, your psychological counselor can do that. That's part of that project of liking yourself. If you want to call it loving yourself, if you want to call it self-worth, if you want to call it turn off whatever, wherever it came from, whatever it is of that critical thinking, it's not even within some normal range. It is overly critical. And you can make that good argument, well, it came from somewhere, because we would hope someplace in everyone's life there's a bit of innocence. You don't even know you. You don't even have the psychological awareness. Your psychological development, your brain development does not even allow you, development, does not even permit you to get outside of yourself and look at yourself. But once that kicks in, it doesn't come as much from others after maybe somebody has done that to you, programmed you. Likely they were programmed before they got to you in the same manner or fashion, but they didn't understand it, have the wherewithal to stop it. They've contaminated you. But trying to get that within a more normal scope, and others are important even in that, because they may represent somewhat normal scope. They may see it more objectively. You see it, as rightly you would, subjectively. Test it. That's what your psychological counselor does. That's what your psychotherapist does. That's what your friends do. As much they are objective. But we know not all friends can be truly objective. And then why? Maybe you might want to seek the assistance of someone who does what I do for a profession. We try to be very objective. We try to look at that objectively. We are then that lens. We offer feedback to you when you bring those cringy, low self-esteem concerns. And how powerful is that? Well, if it's never tested, if you don't have a supportive environment, which possibly then might speak to how you got it again, once again, you got it in the first place, then opening up, being open to others, allowing them to understand your subjective perspective of you, even if that feels a bit cringy. Oh no, they're going to see that I don't have any pants on. Oh no, they're going to see that I can't sing. Oh no, performance anxiety to the maximum extreme. You have to get past that. And really, truly, that is the intervention. Test it. But you have to, must, get past yourself to do that, to get the objective feedback. Maybe there'll be some corrections. Coaching is always possible. You may be open to that. That might be a little painful too if you happen to be such a hypercritical sort of thinker. It may be very difficult in that bit of a narcissistic bent to receive that, because it's going to seem, even to the extreme, of really criticism. But it's not. It's just reestablishing or establishing, possibly for the first time, that better standard. The article speaks of a lot of grace and mercy, universality, ubiquitousness. Everybody's got some of this. It's not only you. I think everybody has some self-esteem issues. Everybody, in that same way, is probably at times a bit narcissistic, sensitive. Everybody's probably had a cringe moment. Does that make you feel any better? Everybody has messed up on stage. Everybody literally has probably shown up as prepared as they might say they are and discovered they're not. Everybody may be in that somewhat of an innocence, even in that somewhat of a, I feel so comfortable right now, just allowing myself to be me in front of you, and then discovered, oh no, it was a mistake. It was the wrong person to do that with. They're not really as nice as they seem to be. Oh, they've got an advantage. Oh, it triggers me. I'm reminded of when others have done this. Again, it could go all the way back in primary source to your parents. It could be middle school, elementary school sort of experiences. It could be economic, socioeconomically driven. It could be in any of those dimensions, a diversity, equity, and inclusion. It could be, don't discriminate on any basis. But we all have that experience. Understand, appreciate, some have it more than others. I'm glad and thankful when I haven't, but at the same time, I know in some ways I have and the ways that they haven't. We should do everything we can to make it as fair as possible. But we all go through this. Everybody's had to ask somebody out on a date or whatever it's called anymore these days, only to discover, well, I really don't think of you that way. Or if it's something of, oh, we'll try it, then you get ghosted afterwards. They don't respond or return your continued pursuits, respond to or return that interest in you as you're showing it to them. It's all the jobs that we didn't get. It's the confidence that we thought we had this, only to put up a goose egg on the scoreboard, as it has previously formally been described. It feels like a sucker punch. You didn't see it coming. It's not false in the sense that maybe you had everything again as well planned as you could, but there's serendipity. There's randomness that always seems to at times present things situationally, circumstantially, you didn't expect. It's okay. But I think in that performance anxiety dimension, don't let that become your whole life. Or if you've had an unfair start, a lot of criticism. Maybe you're really, really good at something and everybody wanted you to continue to be good at something and they just loved it that you were good at something, even to the extent that once you finally got out there and everybody discovered this about you, then the pressure was really on because they couldn't let you do anything but win. You had to be perfect all the time. It's okay to not succeed or win at everything. It's okay to not be a perfectionist or perfection, not be perfect and therein don't fall into the trap of being a perfectionist. Being around people who love you unconditionally helps. It helps in a lot of ways. Not only does it take that dimension of pressure performance off of you, but they're continually supportive. It's not that they don't try or attempt to encourage you They do. It's not that they wouldn't be objective and share objective feedback, maybe help you make some corrections. But the unconditional part means that all of that isn't going to be conditional. And in what way? They're not going to reject you. They're not going to think of you that way. You think of you that way. They don't think of you that way. And in some measure, then that takes that burden off of you. Should. Affirmation. But you have to do some self-affirmation. You have to begin with some self-encouragement so they can agree with you on that premise. And then you really can get better because you won't be inhibited. You won't be standing on stage thinking about all the things that would result in that sucker punch of a cringe attack. I think it's important, too, the article doesn't go there, but I'm going to here. I think forgiveness is so essential. It would be in that same way of forgiving others when they've done that to you, been overly critical, but forgiving yourself, or forgiving yourself so that then others, if they are forgiving, you'll receive it. It wipes the slate clean. You're not going to be in that moment thinking about all your failures. You will be thinking, oh, I've been here before. I've got some time, experience under my belt. I can do this. I've already gone through some of that and this that were then mistakes. I've tried to learn from them. It's okay if I make a mistake. The pressure's off. You can begin to really enjoy the moment and the experience. And there's nothing quite like, in terms of performance, receiving optimal sort of status. Of performing, achieving optimal status of performing, than to not think about it. Just go do it. Practice makes perfect. That's when you should think about it. This is when you should do all of this critical analysis, not hypercritical, not criticism, not with a negative bent, not with manipulative intentions to manipulate you. Or even evil intentions, if I could call it that. That out of some sort of bad place in somebody else, they're going to take you down. Or somehow undermine your credibility. Put you down to make themselves feel better. But when you're in the moment, just be in the moment and do it the best you can, and enjoy it the most you can. And probably, if that were to do anything long term for the future, it should then eliminate some of the cringe. I've already exposed myself. I'm already out there. I've already lived through what I believe others might be thinking about me. I've already faced what I, unfortunately, in my low self-esteem, have been thinking about me. And now I can go live my life and really enjoy it. I don't have to make every moment so critical, significant, as to at any time, in any of those moments, believe that it's going to make it or break it. Make me or break me. Practice some unconditional positive regard or love for yourself. That is the antidote to critical negative thinking. Doubt, fear, worry, apprehension, hypervigilance, all those things that cripple us in terms of performance. Should you need any assistance, of course, you can always reach out to us, me, drmdclay@thewordhouse.com. You can call 304-523-WORD-9673. At Word House, Facebook, YouTube, any of those other sites you might go to, platforms you might go to. And with that, of course, thewordhouse.com, we're online. You can also find, speaking of which, online, at the Psychology Today website, a directory of vetted providers who do just the same. Offer psychological counseling, psychotherapy services, telehealth, again, virtually, or in person. They're all vetted. But if you should be one of these individuals, such as myself, or all of us, that has some difficulty still, not quite as far along as we'd want to be, in dealing with these cringe attacks, you should do that. Reach out and talk to someone. We will be objective. We'll offer feedback, but we'll do it with unconditional love. We call it in the business positive regard and affirmation. And it does work. We'll help you to like yourself, love yourself better. I want to thank you, however, for taking this moment or the opportunity to listen to the podcast, which is Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. And I'd like to invite you back to our next podcast, which we drop weekly. Until we get this chance or that chance to meet again, I want to wish you the very best of good brain health, good mind health, good behavioral health. And I also sincerely want to say thanks.